for more than 70 years have faced this type of brutal occupation. But beyond that, Al-Quds Day is not only an opportunity to care and to sympathize, it's also a call to action. We have in hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi says that Nabi Isa used to frequently say this. He would say that the one who does not attend to healing the wound of the wounded is most surely a partner of the one who caused that wound. Allah Ta'ala, if He wants, is more than capable of taking care of the oppression and of removing the oppressors and the oppression that they cause. But it is a test for those who are aware of this to see what they can do. Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَانْتَصَرَ مِنْهُمْ وَلَكِنْ لِيَبْلُوَ بَعْضُكُمْ بِبَعْضٍ. If He wanted, He could have done what's necessary. He could have granted victory to the oppressed. But rather, it is a test for some of you. You are tried by others. And so Al-Quds is a call to action, to do our part in terms of becoming educated, in terms of spreading awareness, in terms of making sure that this terrible tragedy and this terrible spot on history is not buried away and doesn't fall into negligence. To do our part in terms of economic support, or in some cases economic boycott. But Al-Quds is more than that.
Philistine, 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 Philistine. Palestine, Palestine, oh Palestine, on your land Allah plays great signs. Though the world sees your scars and hears your cries, Allah is your God and you will survive.
This particular Al-Quds Day is a special one, where around the world we are plagued with the virus. They say that the total weight of this virus, if you were to measure it around the world, is less than a gram. But yes, yet this less than a gram substance virus has caused so much havoc around the world. Besides the scientific, you know, origins of the virus and acknowledging the suffering that it's caused, we can also spend a moment to think about some of the divine wisdom behind the presence of this virus. Has it not opened up the door for people to realize the truth about the structures which are supposed to support them? In America, where millions of people are filing for bankruptcy, people are suffering. You have the US Congress in the process of passing through a bill to give $38 billion in aid to Israel. Doesn't this cause a question in the mind of the free people as to where the government's loyalties lie? It's also an opportunity for those who practice these arrogant practices to be humbled, to realize that they cannot go unchecked in their oppression. There will be an end. They will be called to question about their illegal occupation and annexation of land. They will be called to question about their maiming of peaceful protesters, their detention of innocent children, their denial of basic humanitarian aid, their seizing of homes without any right to that property, their ethnic genocide, their targeted assassination of high-ranking individuals whose only crime was to fight against terrorism. This pandemic is an opportunity for them to see that they are meant to be humble servants of God. There are powers which are greater than they are. Are they going to take heed to these? If not, then that brings us to the third reason and the third benefit of the Quds Day, which is one to give hope. We know the divine precedent. Allah Ta'ala gives us the divine promise, وَنُرِيدُ أَنَّمُنَّ عَلَى الَّذِينَ اسْتُضْعِفُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. Those who are oppressed will find justice. Those who are oppressed will become the leaders in the land. And Pharaoh and Haman and their hosts from them, and those who take the practices of Pharaoh, they will see that they will be humbled, and they will see that among those they oppress, they will rise to the forefront and they will become the leaders. So Al-Quds Day is about remembering that promise. And as we raise our hands in dua and our tongues are remembering God, we who have been purified with the month of fasting are joined by those of other faiths throughout the earth, the people of truth, the people of justice. And all of us, when we call upon God year in, year out, we can do so knowing with confidence that God's promise will be fulfilled, justice will be restored. صلى الله على محمد وعلى آله.
No mother, no father to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I will show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt. The battle is mine. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. I saw those rockets and bombs shining in the sky, like drops of rain in the sun's light, taking away everyone dear to my heart, destroying my dreams in a blink of an eye. What happened to our human rights? What happened to the sanctity of life and all those other lies? I know that I'm only a child, but is your conscience still alive? Oh, yeah. I will caress with my bare hands every precious grain of sand, every stone and every tree. 'Cause no matter what they do, they can never hurt you. 'Cause your soul always be free.
Greetings to resistance, greetings to the land of olives. Greetings to Palestine, greetings to the land of pain and the oppressed, greetings to the Holy Quds, greetings to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the land of divine messengers, greetings to resistance and to courage, greetings to the tears of bereaved mothers, greetings to the youth whose blood has been spilt, greetings to the youth and children who stand against the cruel Zionists. For more than 7 decades, Palestine has been beleaguered, and Palestine has been occupied by the most cruel people on earth, the Zionists. But the countdown has already begun for the child-killing regime. This prophecy, the divine promise in the Holy Quran, where the Almighty says, "And we desired to show favor to those who were abased in the land, and to make them imams, and to make them the heirs." Father of the Islamic Revolution and founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, designated the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day. Imam Khomeini asked the Islamic nations and governments to close ranks, to unite against the bloodthirsty and usurper Israeli regime. His call on the Islamic Ummah coincided with then-Egyptian President Anwar Sadat's betrayal of the Palestinian cause through signing of the scandalous Camp David Accord with the fake Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, said in his message to the Islamic Ummah, "I invite all world Muslims to choose the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, which can determine the fate of the people of Palestine, as World Quds Day. In a ceremony, declare Muslims international solidarity and support for the legal rights of the Muslim people of Palestine." Dear listeners, the Islamic Revolution of Iran has been the supporter of the oppressed and downtrodden since its victory in 1979. Imam Khomeini called the Palestinian issue as the top priority for the Islamic world even before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, and always supported the Palestinian cause. He called Israel a cancerous tumor which must be uprooted. Imam Khomeini could see how dangerous the Zionist regime was in its expansionist policies. He used to caution the leaders of the Arab world and Islamic countries against the ultimate goal of the fake Zionist regime, namely to occupy the lands between the Nile and the Euphrates, in a bid to obliterate all Islamic lands and massacre Muslims and slave them. Following the ideals of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also prioritized the issue of Palestine for the Islamic Ummah. He has called Israel a cancerous tumor. This description of Israel shows the fact that this regime will continue its criminal life at the cost of destroying others. The Zionist regime first usurped 5% of the Palestinian territories, but now it has occupied more than 90% of these territories. Devastations of Palestinian homes, coercive expulsion of the Palestinians from their homeland, wide construction of Jewish settlements, extensive construction of illegal Jewish settlements on Palestinian lands, murdering and incarceration of brave Palestinian youth. Even Palestinian children are imprisoned in Zionist jails. Intensive economic siege on Palestinians, especially the people of the Gaza Strip. Harsh restrictions on Palestinian mobility are all part of the Zionist regime's mistreatment of Palestinians. Palestine and Gauls have a history of over 45 centuries. The land is sacred for Islam, Christianity and Judaism because many divine messengers got their divine mission there, and it was the first Qibla of Muslims. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is also the place of ascension to heaven of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Although this year, due to the coronavirus pandemic, there won't be demonstrations in the streets of Islamic cities, the issue of Palestine remains the top issue of the Islamic world, no matter how many servile leaders of Arab countries betray the Palestinian cause and normalize their ties with a diabolical regime in Tel Aviv. Most of the Arab leaders have betrayed Islam, the Palestinian cause, and the Holy Quran, as they have turned their backs upon the Palestinians and united with the Zionists. They have become the minions of the Zionists and are Israel's partners in crime. Last year, these mean leaders capitulated to the former US President Donald Trump and his bid to reduce the financial aid to Palestine. Shukri Bashara, Palestinian finance minister, said last year, that the assistance of Arab states for Palestine had decreased by as much as 81.6%. The Al Alam television channel announced that Arab countries had helped $38.1 million from January to August of 2020, while this figure stood at $198.3 million in previous year 2019. The Saudi regime's help to the Palestinians only amounted to $30 million in the first 8 months of 2020, whereas the same figure was $130 million in 2019. For sure, the Saudis, Emiratis, Bahrainis are partners in crime with the Zionist regime. What adds salt to injury to the Palestinians is the fact that the United Nations, the UN Security Council and other international bodies have had no role in alleviating the pain of the Palestinians, despite their vociferous claims of human rights, rights of women and children, and so on. This is while if a Jewish person's property is lost or an incident takes place for a Jew somewhere in the world, these same international bodies, including the United Nations, will express sympathy for them. Brutal expulsion of the Palestinian people, people of Yemen and other Muslim lands are not included in the charter of these so-called international organizations. For more than 70 years, the Israeli regime has committed the most heinous crimes in history against Palestinians. But the United Nations has kept silent. Its affiliated bodies have tacitly approved these Israeli crimes. And even if they have issued resolutions against the Zionist regime, these resolutions have never been binding. They have been mere scraps of paper and a cause of mockery by Israel as it has been emboldened to carry on with its crimes. The United States, Israel's principal backer, has used its power of veto at the United Nations to back up the Zionist regime. And the Zionist regime has continued with its nefarious crimes against humanity. Like the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has emphasized the Quranic principle of resistance, saying this is the only way to deter Israel and to support the Palestinian cause. Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The main recommendation is the continuation of the struggle and expansion of the arena of jihad in all Palestinian territories. And no doubt, the Zionist virus will not last, and with the efforts, faith and courage of all Muslims, it will be uprooted and obliterated from this region."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
We the people.
With support for Israel.
The U.S. has been giving the Israeli regime unwavering support from the get-go. Thus, Israel has no greater friend than the United States today. The U.S. has given Tel Aviv billions of dollars in foreign military aid to remain a most strategic ally to the Zionist regime. Here's how they spend the money. Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Mila Javan Mardi. In this episode, we will delve into decades of US abetment of Israel's brutal policies, not just against its neighbors, but across the region and even the rest of the world. And more importantly, whether or not that support is undergoing any shifts today. Thank you for watching We the People.
As a young girl visiting Palestine to see my grandparents and extended family, I watched as my mother had to go through dehumanizing checkpoints. I remember shaking with fear when checkpoints appeared in the small village of Beth Orel Foka. Tanks and guns everywhere.
Washington's closeness to Tel Aviv has helped strengthen the U.S. presence in the West Asian region. The United States has stored military equipment in Israel since the early 1990s. Yet the unbreakable bond between Israel and the U.S. runs deeper than military aids and treaties.
Anyone who wants to contribute to the cause, anyone who wants to provide funds or any other kind of help is welcome. We love our friends, and we don't see why some people should feel uneasy about taking assistance or money from this or that friend.
The so-called State of Israel was established by the Israeli Declaration of Independence on 14th of May 1948. Israel was officially declared a state, setting off on a path to brutality towards the occupied lands, neighboring countries, and beyond. Today, Tel Aviv's atrocities have been acknowledged by almost every state in the world. Our first guest is Dr. Rabab Abdulhadi, a senior scholar and the director of Arab and Muslim Ethnicities and Diaspora Studies at San Francisco University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. Dr. Abdulhadi, first of all, how do you evaluate the U.S.-Israel relations throughout history and the unwavering support Washington has offered to Tel Aviv?
Historically, the United States has supported Israel. Since actually the foundation of the State of Israel in 1948, more successive U.S. administrations have increased support as they went along until the latest president, Trump, has actually not only supported Israel but went along unconditionally with every aspect of its colonialist, racist, and apartheid policies. So this has been going on and has gotten to a very alarming situation right now.
Many thanks for your insight, Dr. Abdulhadi.
The U.S. support for Israel does not only involve the U.S. government itself. A glance at the history of the West's support for the Israeli regime shows that the number of Christian evangelicals backing the Zionist agenda stands way above the actual Jews. Christian Zionism is a phenomenon of the past and the present, a false ancient obsession that still today gets to play a significant role in world politics, particularly inside establishments of superpowers such as the United Kingdom and the United States.
Christians have directly brought over 750,000 Jews to Israel. That it started with the Soviet or the Russian Jews. It continued with Ethiopian Jews, where we brought most of the Ethiopians. It continued with some of these lost tribes of B'nai Menashe from India. But today, we bring from 28 countries.
But making Jews go to lands that belong to Palestinians comes with a high cost for humanity. How can the Christian Zionists' ancient prophecies and their combination with power in Washington be justified, considering its impact on the reality of people's lives today? Abbas Hamida is with us to discuss that. He's a Palestinian activist and commentator. He's also the co-founder of Al-Avda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition. Hello and welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Mr. Hamida, what is on the evangelicals' agenda?
The Christian Zionists have an agenda, you know, in occupied Palestine, more so probably than the Jewish Zionists. I mean, in my opinion, they're just being used. So they have that same colonial settler mentality where we see in Palestine, for example, Jews coming from anywhere around the world, in particular Europe, they come and build these illegal outposts. Okay, they build these houses on the mountaintop right across the street from the Palestinian people. You know, these people are extremely delusioned. They believe in a fanatical style, an ISIS style, if you will, of religion.
Thanks for your insights. Stay with us.
Evangelicals began cultivating ties with Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu during his first stint as prime minister in the 1990s. Today, the Israeli premier is the evangelicals' rock star. But not all Israelis have that sense of trendline in the U.S. Instead, some fear the Christian Zionists' true missionary agenda, converting them.
I believe that evangelicals support Israel because they connect Israel to their faith. Their Bible is a Jewish Bible. Their Messiah is a Jewish Messiah. And it's a connection. It's a DNA that goes back to Sunday school and to their very being. It's a love affair. It's a romance with a nation that is connected to heaven and earth.
That has made Israelis, even those residing on illegal settlements, view evangelists as a threat to Jews, though the Christians may have just been dispatched to help them harvest grapes at their vineyards on the occupied Palestinian territories. So, how is the love-hate relationship going?
Christian Zionists are very much committed to the preservation of Israeli colonialism, racism, and apartheid, because they actually also have this belief that if they bring about the power of Israel, Israel is going to fall apart, and by the Israel's falling apart, that's going to bring up the Messiah. So actually they are interested, they are engaged and invested in the destruction of the Jewish people, if you will, inside Israel. The Zionists, the Jewish Zionist lobby, and non-Jewish, because it is not only Jews, and there are many, many Jews, growing number of Jews, who stand on the side of justice in for Palestine and join hand in hand with Palestinians in the struggle for justice for all, and also refuse to allow Israel to speak in their name. They don't want to be complicit in the crimes of Israel against the Palestinians.
The American Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, is another powerful entity pressuring Washington to pursue Israeli interests. Since money is what fuels American support for Israel, the pro-Israel lobbying behemoth has too much sway over American policy.
To advocate, to affect policy, for the security of the Jewish state, for the benefit of the United States, for today, for tomorrow, forever. We are AIPAC, proud, pro-Israel Americans, bringing Democrats and Republicans together, citizen activists, strengthening two great nations, moving America and Israel forward together. AIPAC, America's pro-Israel lobby.
Founded more than 50 years ago to strengthen, protect, and promote the U.S.-Israel relationship, the Israeli lobby in the U.S. also makes sure that dissenting voices are not allowed to be heard by being branded as anti-Semitic. With the organization's strong encouragement, AIPAC's members keep endorsing or raising money to influence U.S. politics in favor of Israel. So what is AIPAC after in the U.S. political system?
AIPAC lobby in Washington, D.C., that continues to basically support the idea that Israel is somehow an ally to the United States because they share the same values, because it's a Judeo-Christian society. And as we know, that's all hogwash. Their main interest is, the United States' main interest is basically to have hegemony in the region and to dominate and to have their military powers inside the Middle East, you know, inside occupied Palestine. This way, it's part of their global domination period.
The main victims of Israel's vicious actions are indeed Palestinians. Decades of systematic crackdown by the occupying forces have taught Palestinian generations that resistance remains the sole method to nullify the regime's inhumane tactics.
Daily life under occupation has yielded a whole lot of troubles for the Palestinian people, which they have to deal with on a daily basis, while their sufferings are underreported. Many activists assert that it is time to pay more attention to resistance against the occupation of Palestine if the world is actually serious about ending the Israeli aggression in the region. Is there no two-state solution then?
Palestinians do not necessarily support what is called the two-state solution, nor is the two-state solution viable. It's not even viable. I mean, even if you want to say this is what you want, there isn't, it doesn't really work. Israel has continued to take on more land and expropriate this. The other thing is that I think it's really important to understand that Palestinians as a colonized, marginalized, oppressed people should not have to have the responsibility to find solutions for the colonial power that's oppressing them. So on all counts, this is not what Palestinians want. This has been, Israel actually has consistently destroyed any possibilities. The United States has supported Israel.
One of the most brutal and obviously illegal actions that Israel has been taking is the construction of settlements in Palestinian lands. Thousands of Israelis live in settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and East Jerusalem al-Quds. This is while all Israeli settlements are illegal under international law as they're built on occupied land.
We have a terrorist haven that is getting more and more rockets shipped Iran and elsewhere.
Senator. Nick, what are your thoughts on how that played out during
the... Well, that exchange, you know, the full Israel-Palestinian exchange was, I thought, by far the most interesting moment of the debate. They actually, you know, it calmed down. They sort of talked to each other a little bit more. And Bernie Sanders laid out pretty clearly a position I have not seen any politician lay out on national stage ever, which is to say, look, there is a conflict, and really our sympathies have to be a heck of a lot more with the Palestinians.
The international community has repeatedly opposed Israel's settlement activities, urging U.S. President Biden to put pressure on Israel over the issue. In the meanwhile, Israel keeps approving plans for more settler homes. Is it wishful thinking to somehow expect U.S. policymakers to make a positive change?
I mean, we would like to see change through Congress in the United States. We would like to see, you know, mainstream politics go ahead and leaders getting involved. We would love that. We would love for there to be a real workable solutions where the refugees can come back under UN Resolution 194, which grants the Palestinian refugees all around the world the right to return to their homes. Okay, that's my main activism here in the United States, is to push for that. But in all reality, what I see is that this illegal Zionist entity is heading towards self-destruction. You know, unfortunately, they venture and some of these maneuvers that will one day, you know, end the Zionist program in Palestine.
Many in the United States question the levels of aid and general commitment to Israel. But those behind the curtain feel confident that the U.S. relations with Israel strengthen the U.S. presence in West Asia. But according to some polls, the nation is relatively divided about Washington's policies towards Tel Aviv.
They do not believe that there should be a constant incitement by Hamas, aided and abetted by Iran, against Israel.
I don't think that anybody would suggest that Israel invites or welcomes missiles flying into their country. That is not the issue. And you evaded the answer. You evaded the question. The question is not, does Israel have a right to respond? Not, does Israel have a right to go after terrorists and destroy terrorism? That's not the debate. Was their response disproportionate? I believe that it was. You have not answered that.
Israel is more popular among older Americans, Republicans, conservatives, and evangelicals, and less popular among liberals, African Americans, and Democrats. Regardless of its public image in the US, Israel has an immense economic power with more companies listed on the NASDAQ than any other country outside North America. Is it any different with Democrats in power today?
I think the only way the new President Biden's administration is, as far as occupied Palestine goes, is lip service. The Democrats are better at deceiving the world. They're better at deceiving their own citizens by offering lip service about Palestine. You know, saying we want to get back to the table, we want to do this, and we want to. So, in other words, getting back to the table is still the same situation. It's still the same policy, because going back to the table is just delaying time. You know, for the Palestinian people, there's an occupation that needs to end. The settlements must be dismantled. There's a long list of Palestinian refugees, as you know, languishing all over the world. Over 7.2 internally and externally million Palestinians, 7.2 million, who wish to go back to their original towns and homelands in Palestine. I happen to be one of them in the United States.
The Zionist regime was emboldened to new heights during the administration of former President Trump. The billionaire businessman, who was controlled in part by the Christian Zionists and the Jewish lobby in America, served Tel Aviv like no U.S. presidents before him. He moved the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem al-Quds, a holy city that Palestinians consider the capital of their future state.
It is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Israel is a sovereign nation with the right, like every other sovereign nation, to determine its own capital. It was 70 years ago that the United States, under President Truman, recognized the State of Israel. Ever since then, Israel has made its capital in the city of Jerusalem.
Unlike former presidents, Trump recognized the city as the Israeli capital, despite international outcry. The U.S. moved on and officially recognized Syria's Golan Heights to the regime's territory as well, although it had already been occupied for many years.
The United States is an interventionist power. The United States is very much interested in continuing to be intervening in the region. In that sense, Israel actually is quite the relationship with Israel. And I wouldn't say that the United States is sort of like the Israel is not only a base for the U.S., Israel is a junior partner. They both want to control the oil of the region. They want to control the region, which is a very strategic place. They want to be able to suppress any kind of possibilities for movements. They already participated both in Arab regimes' support for the counter-revolutions in the Arab world.
Many thanks. Stay with us as we have more for you.
The administration under President Joe Biden has pledged to change course in the Israel-Palestinian conflict. During his 2020 presidential election campaign, Biden reiterated his proclivity for a so-called two-state solution. The U.S.-Israel relations have also been at odds, at least on the surface, over the Biden administration's stated efforts to return Washington to the Iran nuclear deal, which Trump quit.
Remember here, Biden is very pro-Israel. I don't think that we can, you know, sugarcoat the reality that although there was a very tense relationship between Netanyahu and Obama, Biden has always had a very good relationship with the Israelis and with Netanyahu, generally speaking. That's not going to be reversed. And frankly, I'm sure there may be some elements of the progressive party of the Democrats who'd want to see that reversed. But the majority of the Senate will be Republican, and I think there's just no appetite to do something like reversing the embassy decision. On the JCPOA, I think there is definitely going to be an interest to go back to some sort of multilateral negotiations, which the JCPOA was. The challenge, of course, is that the world isn't the same as it was when it was negotiated in 2015.
In reality, Biden is being similarly controlled by the regime's powerful lobbies pursuing the Zionist agenda inside the United States. The pro-Israel U.S. media at times portrays Biden's relations with Israel as less cozy compared to previous American leaders. But his administration intends to build on some of Trump's one-sided policies in the region. Unlike Barack Obama and Donald Trump, Biden has not named a special envoy to focus on the Israeli-Palestinian portfolio.
Hundreds of delegates to the Democratic National Convention have asked Biden to get rid of a few pro-Israeli strategic people on his staff for his campaign, and Blinken was one of them. So that's one thing. The secondly is that Biden has also said that they're going to continue the same U.S. policy towards Israel by centering what they call Israeli security without actually giving any attention to Palestinian security, Palestinian safety. Palestinians are the ones who are occupied, who are colonized, who are displaced, who are uprooted. They are the ones who need security. It's not Israel who's like, what, the fourth or the fifth strongest army in the world. It doesn't really need that. Israel presents the argument for security in order to deflect from the real issues at stake, which is Israel's racism, colonialism, occupation, the displacement of Palestinians, the refusal to allow Palestinians to return. So now the United States government says that this is what they support. as far these are one of the main anchors of the of their policy towards Israel. They have restored some of the things that Trump taken away. So they restored U.S. funding towards UNRWA, United Nations Relief and Work Agency.
Biden has so far adopted a passive role in dealing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, unlike most of his recent predecessors. He has no plans for any sort of peace conference or even a peace process anytime soon. Yet, his initial resistance in engaging with the issue could eventually change, making him unable to totally ignore it.
Look, you're all united. We're all united by our unyielding, and I mean it literally, unyielding commitment to the survival, security, and success of the Jewish state of Israel. But what impresses me most is what I know those of you who've been with AIPAC a long while understand is the lifeblood and the certainty and security. And that is the more than 4,000 young people you have here. Would all the young people who are here stand up if it's your first? I want to see.
That was the former vice president. With Biden in the White House again, Trump's heavily pro-Israel tilt has been replaced with reluctance to wade into the conflict for now.
Even if the U.S. shows more interest in dealing with conflict, Palestinians have already lost their hope and trust in the United States' baseless claims of pursuing peace. It is therefore unlikely for the U.S. to change course in regards to Israel and its atrocities. I'm your host, Mila Jawamardi.
Proper Nutrition with Brother Sayyid Vahid Alavi in the program The Month of Allah.
Assalamu alaikum everyone, this is Sayyid Wahid and welcome to the month of Allah. I hope that you have enjoyed your fasting during all these beautiful days of Ramadan. We talked about what to eat at the time of Sahari in the previous programs. I will continue with a very important question that many ask me. They ask, what recommendations do you have for students who study in high school or universities or athletes? And we are talking about professional athletes who play in different games. We have football, we have American football, we have Muslims in the NBA, and so on and so forth. And as we know, many of them fast, alhamdulillah for that. So what recommendations do you have for athletes and students? What I try to say is that athletes during the month of Ramadan and students, they need more protein-rich food, like sugars and more sugar and vitamins than normal people. And when they start with their iftar, and after iftar, they want to go straight to exercise, there should be a 3 hours distance between their iftar and between their exercise. So the distance is very important there, especially for the bloodstream to reach the muscles of the body. In Ramadan, sport exercises should be lighter because the body loses a lot of salt and water during exercise, and that results in extreme weakness in some sports. The athlete must gradually consume a lot of liquid to meet the needs of his body. dates, soups, vegetables, and milk are recommended for athletes and students likewise. If an individual intends to exercise heavy exercises or have some heavy sport activities after iftar, again, there should be a 3 hours distance between his iftar and his sport exercise. And it is very advisable to eat egg yolks for that person. Eat egg yolks or fish at the time of iftar and before you start your exercise. The use of a lot of liquid, including fruit juices, is also appropriate before exercise. The amount of energy from the protein that athletes use should be about 15% and up to 20%, because the high protein is not suitable and it produces waste materials in the blood and gives tiredness during exercise. This was all for this time. Inshallah ta'ala, we will continue with more Ramadan tips in the coming programs. Until next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you. Ramadan Kareem.
وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن هو الفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
The Light.
Over the past few years, people have become more aware of the detrimental effect of littering to the environment. Bolivians have launched a nationwide campaign aimed at protecting the country's scenic spots and waterways from human waste. Hundreds of volunteers were seen cleaning up the Valley of the Souls near La Paz, which is famous for its unusual razor-sharp rock formations. The volunteers, aided by heavy machinery, managed to collect over 15 tons of plastic waste and construction rubble from the rocky canyon. Activist Carola says people needed to speak up more in defense of the nature, which is increasingly coming under threat.
It is incredible how we can find jewels like this painting amid all these piles of rubble and garbage. And we are surprised and ask, what is going on with nature? It is a tourist place where many people come. The Valley of the Souls is very special, and many people have gathered together here to be a voice for nature and to get it the care and respect it deserves.
Last month, the campaign also cleared the highland lake of Uru in western Bolivia, which is said to be full of more plastic than water. Campaigners say they will continue their efforts until no place with garbage is left in the country. An exhibition in the Belgian province of Walloon-Brabant has put on display several objects belonging to French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. A belt with the word Waterloo written on it, a flintlock pistol, Napoleon's shoe, bathtub, clothes, and several other objects are all displayed in the exhibition. Many of the items are brought from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. The curators say the exhibition aims to show Napoleon's daily life and the way he lived. Earlier this week, an auction was set up in France offering Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, estimated to be sold for $18,000. May 5th marks the 200th anniversary of Napoleon's death. People always try to find new ways to connect and support each other at the moment of crisis. A young Indian is one such example who is saving lives by providing free oxygen to coronavirus patients. 32-year-old Shanawaz Sheikh is a resident of India's commercial hub, Mumbai. He launched the campaign during the first wave of the pandemic when his friend's cousin died of COVID-19 on the way to hospital. Now popularly known as Oxygen Man, Shanawaz sold his car last June and used the money to buy oxygen cylinders for those in need. He and his team have now set up a control room to deliver oxygen to patients. They send the cylinder as soon as they receive a call from a COVID patient or a family.
Without oxygen, a patient can't live. They need it very badly, even in the ambulance on the way to hospital. If Shanawaz wasn't helping, patients would likely not even make it to hospitals. They would die on the way.
Shanawaz says his team helped nearly 5,000 people during the first wave of the pandemic last year and is planning to help as many as possible during the second wave. His initiative is earning him much praise on social media, with many calling Shanawaz and his team real heroes during the crisis.
Archaeologists have found a meaning for mysterious new findings in a cave in Mexico. They believe they are part of ancient Maya rituals. Around 1,200 years ago, some people imprinted their hands on the cave walls. The 137 prints are in two colors, black and red. Experts say the black ones represent death, while the red paintings are a reference to war or life. An analysis of their size also shows that the handprints were likely made by children as they entered puberty. The subterranean cavern, called Chichen Itza, is located nearly 10 meters below a tree which Mayans assume sacred. Little hotels for little bees. In Colombia, wooden structures are built for the insects to rest after a hard day. The Oporo Valley Metropolitan Authority has installed the hexagon-shaped rooms for bees of all shapes and sizes. Every day, volunteers clean the bamboo hotel with paintbrushes. Designers say the bee hotels are made to protect some species that are more vulnerable.
These little bees are supremely sensitive to poisons, and since they don't produce honey, no one speaks up for them. So we're coming to the rescue.
Designers say bees are losing their habitat all over the world, so the hotels could be a means of survival. Colombia has registered 550 varieties of bees within its borders. In Britain, a revolutionary idea might change many things in regard to maritime boarding operations, a jet suit. This is what the Royal Marines are testing in a variety of scenarios. Wearing the jet suit, each person can fly freely over the water and land on a moving ship. Its developer company, Gravity Industries, says the suit provides quick access to any part of the target vessel. Previously, British paramedics had tested the unique product for search and rescue operations. The suit can reach a speed of 51 kilometers and a height of over 3,600 meters.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now, the 200th death anniversary of French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte has brought a unique opportunity for private collectors to buy his DNA. The auction offers Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, which is estimated to be sold for $18,000. The collection will also include a lock of the French Emperor's hair, a pair of his stockings, a shirt with an embroidered letter N, and other items of clothing.
In my opinion, Napoleon was the first to want to create a Napoleon brand, even when he was alive. He created an image, a symbol, a look, with his hat worn in reverse. It was a very ordinary hat, an ordinary coat, but he was a very good communicator, and he created his image. So generation after generation, we kept this image of Napoleon, his hat, and this contributed to the myth. But it was Napoleon who wanted from the beginning to create an image, a look.
Nearly 360 objects will go under the hammer in the upcoming auction. Many of the items are brought back from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. Historians say his belongings have sparked the passion of collectors in France and other parts of the world. Several years ago, one of the French emperor's signature bicorn hats was sold to a Korean food industry mogul for more than $2 million. A Belgian chocolate maker has come up with the idea of chocolate bunnies in the shape of vaccine syringes to spread hope during the coronavirus pandemic. Geneviève Trapon makes the chocolate bunnies at her workshop in a village south of Brussels. She has dubbed the chocolate syringes Lache à Aztec. I hope I pronounced that correctly. This is not the first time the Belgian confectioner has been inspired by the pandemic to create art. Last year, she also put white masks on its Easter bunnies to keep the spirit alive amid a worsening pandemic. Trapon says she came up with the idea of syringe-shaped bunnies after the first coronavirus inoculations in her country at the end of 2020.
Why did I decide to create the chocolate vaccine? We are still in a period of COVID-19, and it was the logical continuation of the little masked rabbit from last year. Back then, nobody was talking about vaccines. At the end of that year, we started talking about a vaccine, and I thought the rabbit should be vaccinated. It's a symbol of hope, and that's why I decided to create the vaccine.
Trapon says her works show natural health benefits of chocolate. She believes that the chocolate version, like a real vaccine, has enough positive effects such as anti-depression, nutrients, and magnesium. Let's go to the Philippines to meet a man having a big, colorful collection of Happy Meal toys. Percival Log has been into collecting toys since he was five. His collection includes around 20,000 toys from fast food restaurant chains like McDonald's and Burger King. Log also holds a Guinness World Record from 2014. The 50-year-old graphic artist says he always takes good care of his beloved toys. He believes each toy has a story inside.
Toy is like a storyteller in itself. Like, for example, it gives me a glimpse of that particular period when I got it, my story, what's going on, what are the incidents that are attached in the acquisition of that particular toy.
Luke says his family and friends also help him broaden his collection by donating toys. He hopes to display his toy collection for the public to, quote, give people a chance to revisit their childhood memories.
People around the world have been grounded by the coronavirus, with many being forced to work from home. But the Scottish man has made his secluded cliffside a perfect spot against the pandemic-induced change to working habits. Jason Griffin's 34-year-old call center consultant from Glasgow has put remote working technology to the test by moving his office to a dangling shelf off the Irish Sea. His move is seen as an attempt to give rise to the digital nomad, meaning people can use technology to work from wherever connectivity is possible. Griffin says as long as there is a mobile connection and his laptop, he has everything he needs to do his job.
Today we are pushing the technology to its limits because we're going over a cliff face, we're abseiling down to a ledge, and I will be working all day from that ledge and taking and making calls, interacting with internal staff, just showing that remote literally means
the law.
Griffins has set up a temporary office on a cliff face to prove that its performance is as good as a busy office. Call centers are one sector where remote working and technology has kept companies connected to customers. But the digital revolution has seen an inclination towards working remotely.
www.parstoday.com/en